Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
You need parts? O'Reilly Auto Parts has parts. Need them fast? We've got fast. No matter what you need, we have thousands of professional parts people doing their part to make sure you have it. Product availability. Just one part that makes O'Reilly stand apart. The professional parts people.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
It's Freddie Prinz Jr. and Jeff Dye back in the ring. Wrestling with Freddie makes its triumphant return for an electrifying fourth season. Hey, Jeff, are you ready to rumble our way into an all-new season of Wrestling with Freddie?
You better believe I have. I've been practicing my body slams, and I'm jacked.
All right, don't go injuring yourself now. We'll be highlighting the best stories and matches of the week in wrestling from AEW, WWE, and have one-on-one talks with the best talents in the world of pro wrestling.
Listen to Wrestling with Freddie on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, everybody? This is Stephen A. Smith, host of the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast. Tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at the very least as I bring you all new episodes that feature the biggest headlines in the world of sports, pop culture, business, and I answer your phone calls and respond to your tweets. You'll hear my unfiltered opinions and straight-shooter interviews with top celebrities and game changers, all that and more. So listen to the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, it's Jonas Knox. Winter is coming. Heavy rain, sleet, snow, and ice. Are your tires up for the challenge? Tread confidently in winter's worst with a set of new tires from Tire Rack. They sell only the best, like the full line of Pirelli tires. Go to TireRack.com/sports. Tell them what you drive. Your tires will ship fast and free to you or one of over 10,000 recommended installers. TireRack.com, the way tire buying should be.
This is the best of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis on Fox Sports Radio.
Speaking of in the zone, Aaron Rodgers was certainly in the zone last night. Four touchdown passes in a game that was never remotely close. The Packers handled the Bears. It's probably time, honestly, to go ahead and go to Mitch Trubisky. I know the Bears are 1-3. Maybe you wait a couple of more weeks, but what exactly are they waiting for as part of the Mike Glennon era? I'm not sure. If you're a Bears fan, aren't you ready to go ahead and see whether Trubisky is going to be the future of the franchise or not? You're not playing to win the NFC North. You're basically eliminated from that race almost already. I know they got the good win in overtime over the Steelers, but the likelihood of the Bears turning the corner is highly unlikely. And the game last night was not particularly exciting or exhilarating or entertaining. There was never a lot of uncertainty about what was going to happen. It was effectively the football equivalent of watching a cobra with a mouse. But to me, what stands out more so than anything else is what is the larger kind of context was the pregame, right? I mean, to me, most people were going to watch for the pregame, and I think, at least I hope, I think that maybe the protest thing is over. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe there's still going to be a lot of teams doing things on Sunday. But everybody stood for the national anthem. Everybody locked arms. I think this was a one-week blip of national anthem-related angst. The president may well continue to fire away at the NFL, but I think the NFL has wised up and recognizes that engaging in a protest is bad for their business. I think the players are coming around and realizing that it's bad for their business. I think in general, it is a decision that that will not be reinforced after last weekend. Now, several teams have come out and issued statements on this, but to me, that's maybe the biggest takeaway of Thursday night's game. Remember, last week, we didn't have a Thursday night response because the president hadn't made his comments yet. And so everything kind of started in London with the Ravens-Jaguars game. Maybe there are going to be teams that are more aggressive, certainly, than what we saw from the Packers and the Bears. But I think the likelihood is that basically all the air is out of the protest balloon, that there's not going to be a lot left when it comes to this week. And honestly, that weekend, that's going to be the biggest storyline. What exactly is going to happen? Will it continue? Will players stand for the anthem? Will the continued, I would say, division between players and athletes and their fans continue to manifest itself? And I think the answer is No, I think we basically reached the point where this thing has been resolved. I may be crazy for that. It could go to another level this weekend. But I think a lot of people will take the lead from Thursday's game. And I think there's a recognition in the NFL with tens of thousands of people calling up to cancel NFL Sunday ticket, with some sponsors starting to pull back from their association with the NFL, with many fans being very upset that this was bad for NFL business, that the protest didn't really have any kind of legitimate basis in terms of an actionable goal that they hoped was going to have a resolution. And so I think this thing is going to continue to get dialed back. And so as a result, I'm kind of fascinated to see what's going to happen. I'll bring in the crew because I want to go ahead and get their reaction. 877-996-6369. If you want to give me your reaction to last night's game, and in particular, the way that it started and the fact that the protest during the national anthem seems to have vanished, at least on Thursday Night Football. Jason Martin, are you with me that this thing is basically fizzled out, that there's not a lot more left here, or do you think it's going to continue for a longer time period in the kind of the degree to which we saw this past weekend?
I mean, I do think it's going to lessen. I don't know that it's going to be completely gone. I mean, the linking arms thing and the idea of standing up against the president saying that they don't have the right to protest, that was still happening last night. I mean, Aaron Rodgers said it point blank that it wasn't about the anthem and not about the military, but it was an invitation to show unity in the face of divisiveness from the top, was his quote. So it was still protest-ish. It just wasn't kneeling for the anthem anymore. And I think that that's likely what we're going to see. We're going to see this linking arms thing.
But I don't think anybody cares about that.
Some more into that.
I don't think, if you stand for the national anthem and you link arms, I don't think there's fans out there that are going to be like, this is unacceptable. You know, I mean, and that was kind of my takeaway with, if your goal, this is my criticism of Colin Kaepernick from the get-go, right? First of all, what he protested was already being done. So if his interest was that police shootings be rigorously examined by the federal government, and that was already happening. Barack Obama and Loretta Lynch, the attorney general, were already doing exactly what Colin Kaepernick was protesting. So his protest never had any basis in reality relative to what he had hoped was going to happen. But moreover, if your goal is to do a protest, and that's an important goal, you're well within your rights constitutionally to do a protest, then in order to change what exists now, you have to find allies. And the purpose, indeed, of most protests is to draw attention to an injustice, to a wrong, to something that needs to be changed, and persuade the larger body politic of American life that they should be on your side. Well, the stupidest thing about this protest from the get-go was all it did was alienate other people who might have been open to being interested in being on your side. And I don't know if the protesters were too dumb to see this. I don't know if they were so out of touch with who their audience was that they didn't realize that not standing during the national anthem and making a specific stand against America was not the way to persuade the masses of the American population that their side of the protest made sense. And so all it did was actually alienate people, and I think create more people who disagreed with the protesting and the protester stance than it ever did bring in people who were on their side. So I think what has happened is players have gotten set down with, the owners have gotten set down with, they're saying, look, we're losing lots of money based on this protest. And I think ultimately cooler heads are going to prevail. And I think this is also where the lack of a goal of the protest also leads to it fizzling, because everybody who protested on the last weekend, I don't think could even give a reasonable answer as to why they were doing it. I think some people did it because they were allies of Colin Kaepernick. I think some people did it to be a generalized opposition to racism. I think other people did it because they were angry that Donald Trump had called them sons of bitches, I think, honestly. And so having made a response with not necessarily a cohesive or tangible goal, I think most people probably feel like this is already kind of fizzled out. 877-996-6369. LA, what do you guys think? Danny G and Justin, do you believe that this protest is going to continue, or do you think we'll see more like what happened on Thursday night?
I mean, I hope that that you're right and that the protests are going to taper off, and not necessarily because I'm actually definitely not because I'm angry at the protesters or angry at the protests in general, but because I'm I'm tired. I want to get back to football, and I think that
I think that's by far, by the way, the majority opinion of every right. single person listening to us, regardless of your political background at this point. All last year, the discussion was about Colin Kaepernick. All offseason, the discussion was about Colin Kaepernick. And then it looked like that story was basically over.
Yeah.
And then President Trump goes down to a rally in Alabama and fires off at the NFL. And suddenly that story reemerges even more substantially than it had. And I think there are a lot of people out there that just rolled their eyes and were like, this was my last vestige of non-political speech. And now I can't even sit down and watch an NFL football game without having to be marinated, without having to be draped, without having to be totally enmeshed in the political situation in this country today.
Well, and to that point, Clay, and I've thought about this, and I've heard it a couple different places, but I wonder if it's something that, because before this happened, before Trump came out and, you know, called them sons of bitches and all that, it's not exactly like he was winning. You know, the GOP healthcare plan isn't, you know, getting passed, that failed for, you know, the second or third time or whatever it is. And he hasn't had a lot of wins. And now this, he comes out and, you know, says, attacks the protesters. And it's something that a lot of people can get behind. And so I feel like it was kind of a strategic move, because now he's got, you know, a lot of support behind him he was losing it.
I said from the get-go, if you look at all the stakeholders in this story, to me, there were four people and four different stakeholders involved in this story. The president, obviously, in his comments about stand for the national anthem. There were the NFL players. There were the NFL owners. And then there was the partners, the television networks, as it were. And to me, what is most fascinating about all of that analysis is Donald Trump has the vast majority of the American population behind him that players should stand for national anthems. You can disagree with that perspective. You're wrong. Like, the vast majority of people believe that pro athletes should stand for the national anthem and in a respectful fashion. That's just the majority. Whether you vote Democrat, Republican, Independent, the vast majority of people, including virtually everybody who's a Republican, has that opinion. Okay? So that is a very popular opinion for Donald Trump. Politically, it makes sense that he would go down that route. I think it also gives some cover for his travel ban, which nobody covered. I mean, he's playing the media like a fiddle right now. I mean, nobody covered his travel ban. The fact that healthcare collapsed again got very limited coverage. The vast amount of attention that went in the last week or so from the media went to Donald Trump for that situation, okay? The other aspect of this story that is that hurts is the players. There's a prominent divide between individual player opinions politically, I believe, and the average NFL fan, okay? Partly that's race-based, because 70% of the NFL is black and the vast majority of NFL fans are white. But if you walk into any football stadium in America, just about any football stadium in America today, they voted for Donald Trump for president. So if you look around into that stadium, those are Donald Trump voters. And those people are going to be most upset when people don't stand for the national anthem. So the players may not have understood how overwhelmingly negative the response was from the people who pay their salaries and show up for the games. And I think there was a lot more blowback than maybe they would have anticipated. The owners are in between, right? They are frequently rich, probably Republican voters themselves, but they also employ the players, and they've got to keep the fans happy in order to run their business. And they knew this was bad business from the get-go. I guarantee you they were terrified hearing from sponsors. Sponsors are pulling out. Fans are burning their tickets. It's not a good look. And then finally, you have the television networks, and television ratings are down 11% through the first 3 weeks. So all of this conspires to mean that Donald Trump is the only person who can win in this controversy. The players lose, the owners lose, and the network partners and advertising partners of the NFL all lose. Donald Trump wins. And I think the NFL is starting to recognize that. And my hope is that everybody's just going to lock arms or whatever, and this story is going to pretty much vanish as quickly as it arose. I could be wrong. You know, the president could continue to needle everybody in the NFL because, again, it's a political issue that he wins that serves red meat to his base. but my hope is that this thing is going to get resolved.
Be sure to catch live editions of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
I don't know if you've had a chance to read it yet, Jason Martin. I read it this morning before the show started. There's a big 4,500-word piece on me in Politico. If you are interested, I tweeted out the link. It's a hit piece. I mean, I kind of anticipated that it was going to be a hit piece. If you say anything other than typical left-wing sports media talk, then you're an awful human being in the mind of the quote-unquote mainstream media. So, but you can go read that if you want to. You listen to me every day. I always think it's a little bit interesting what quotes get pulled and what don't. I probably say, I don't even know. I mean, thousands of words that I would say a day publicly on this show, right on my website, or right on, or say on my Periscope and Facebook show. But, you know, it's a little bit disappointing just because I thought that the writer was going to be honest and unbiased. And I opened up and let him come and watch the show and everything else. And then he basically just followed through on what is typical, right? I mean, oh, Clay Travis is an alt-right, you know, like far right-wing conservative. I think those of you who listen to this show understand that that's not true, but this is what happens, right? When you have an audience like I do, you know, millions of people every week listening to me, and you don't spout out the usual boring cliches of the left-wing sports media, then the left-wing sports media feels like they need to attack you and they need to put you in your place because they're scared by the success that this show has. And, you know, it surprises me, just as someone who is reasonable and rational, how unreasonable and irrational the media is when it comes to putting everybody into a prescribed box and hoping that they're going to fit a particular worldview. And I think it's crazy. But you can go read that article if you want to. Have you gotten a chance to check it out at all, Jason Martin?
Yeah, I've worked through a little bit of it. I haven't gotten to the end yet. It doesn't surprise me either, although the author did seem to be pretty upstanding, but I think that's kind of par for the course in a lot of cases in terms of when they're in front of your face, they're one thing, and then when they're back behind their keyboard, they can do what it is that they had planned to do originally. I don't think necessarily, I guess I'll be able to answer this a lot better when I get to the end of it. It doesn't matter in any end scheme anyway, especially for what we do, but I don't think this piece is quite as vile or dumb as the Daily Beast piece, though. I will say that.
Well, that's almost impossible to be as bad as that.
Yes,
piece.
Exactly.
But I do think it's funny. Like, the story of Outkick's rise is a pretty compelling one, right? When you think about when I started writing online in 2004, I literally had an audience of zero people, right? Not one person had ever read me on the internet before in 2004 when I started writing online. Now I would say I'm pretty confident that Outkick, both as a website and a radio show and a Periscope and a Facebook show, is maybe the most influential place in all of sports media and beyond, honestly, because we're starting to have a lot of impact on larger cultural issues as well. That's a pretty interesting story, right? How does a guy go from having no readership at all, not a single reader in 2004, mostly without major media help? It's not like the ESPNs or the Foxes of the world put me on television or put me on the front page of their website and tried to create me as a figure. My growth is almost entirely a result of you guys out there in the audience saying, hey, you got to read this guy, Clay Travis. You got to listen to this guy, Clay Travis. You got to pay attention to this guy on Outkick the Coverage, which is happening every single day. I mean, you guys are the voice that spreads our audience and makes our story be able to carry and continue to grow into the millions like it has. I mean, literally in 2004, zero. I remember sitting in my car thinking like, man, if I could ever have 100 readers a day, that would be amazing. And 1,000 was like a ridiculous goal that had no hope, right? And now we're up to millions. I mean, that's not an exaggeration. Millions of people every week read and pay attention and listen to what we say. And that's almost happened without major media assistance, right? We have created this entire universe of Outkick, and that's a pretty amazing story. And what it reflects to me is how much I'm speaking to people like you guys who are out there listening right now, who want what we are sharing. And I think what we share, which the media just doesn't get, is absolute honesty. I think what I do every single day is sit down in front of a microphone and talk in an honest fashion for 3 hours every single day, Monday through Friday. And then in the afternoon, I sit down in front of Periscope and Facebook Live, and I also talk completely honestly for at least a half hour every single day on top of that. And then on the website, I am honest every single day, as honest as I can possibly be, such that a lot of times my wife will be like, oh, you can't say that. Like, you talk to my wife, people say, what's Clay Travis like? You talk to my wife, and she will tell you that I say the exact same things off air as I do on air, and that sometimes that scares her. She's like, oh, you can't say that. That's too controversial. Oh, you can't say that. You know, you're going to get in trouble. Such that she, a lot of times she doesn't even listen to the show. And she has talked about how, like, she went back and watched and read the book Private Parts about Howard Stern's rise. And his wife had some of the same experiences where she was just terrified about what he was going to say on a day-to-day basis. But my goal is very similar to what Howard Stern's goal was back in the day. Sit down and be as honest as possible every day as I can for 3 hours. And frankly, that scares a lot of people. And in the media, they're trying to figure out, oh, why is this happening? Why is there this huge audience consuming what Clay Travis does every day, every week, every month? And why is it growing so quickly? Why can this guy not get shut down? Why, when he goes on CNN and says he loves the First Amendment and boobs and the left wing loses its mind, why didn't he lose his job? Why didn't he lose any sponsors? Why didn't he have any significance? Why is ESPN going on and counting how many times he uses the word boobs on his show and then tweeting about it as if it's unacceptable? Why is this guy continuing to grow? It drives them crazy because they don't understand the country. Because they don't understand what the country is like outside of New York and LA. And it drives them crazy to see the success. And so they, you know, write their hit pieces. And I always say, like, look, all publicity is good publicity as long as you're not facing time in prison, right? It's a pretty fascinating thing to think about because, and I say this too, like, even people out there listening right now who hate me, if you share the fact that you hate me with 10 of your friends, you think that all 10 of those people are going to agree with you. But there are tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of people listening right now who thought they were going to hate me and maybe did hate me initially, and then they kept listening and they're like, you know what? I actually agree with a lot of what Clay Travis has to say. And that's how we grow, because people actually open their minds up, they listen, they're not sheep, and they start to recognize there's a lot of truth to what we're saying. All right, I'm going to take your calls, 877-996-6369. Anyway, you guys know what I'm about. You listen to the show every day, but if you want to read that article, I tweeted it out. You can find it on my Twitter account. Go follow me there, at Clay Travis.
Be sure to catch live editions of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis, weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific.
How good is Tony Romo? Remember how everybody was like, oh, it's going to be hard for Romo to step into the booth and be as good as he possibly, you know, as Phil Simms was or anything else. I mean, CBS looks like geniuses hiring Tony Romo. I mean, I don't remember. I was trying to think about that as I watched Romo last night. I don't remember the last time that I heard a prognosticator on a game come on and I thought, my God, this guy is a superstar this early in his career. Like Tony Romo is. I mean, his ability to analyze the overall landscape, to know exactly what play is coming, to comment in such an intelligent fashion while at the same time being understandable. I mean, he seems so relaxed already. He seems like he's just kind of hanging out, having a beer, and talking with his buddy Jim Nantz. I mean, it is extraordinary how good he is. And I was trying to think, like, John Gruden probably is the best example, but I think he's much better than Gruden. But they have that unique kind of flavor where when you hear them talk, you know who you're listening to. And I would say that Gruden is one that has stood out in recent history. Romo has really stood out. Can you guys think of anybody else who stepped into the booth in the last decade? I mean, obviously, going back in time, John Madden, I think, is probably the best ever at calling NFL games in terms of when you heard him, it was impossible not to like him. You knew him. He had his own particular flavor. Everything about him back in the days when he was on with Summerall calling Cowboy games was just an extraordinary experience, right? But I can't think, can you guys think of anybody who's been better than Romo in the last even 10 or 20 years when it comes to stepping in the booth and being this good? And I say that, by the way, guys, as somebody who has done different forms of media. And I think it's underrated how challenging that can be. You can know the game of football really well, sit down in a booth, and totally freeze up when it comes to, in real time, giving your exact opinion, right? Because it's challenging. People like the opportunity to sit around and think about what they're going to say. In real time, when you react to it, there's a lot of people who, if they have 10 minutes to watch a play, they could come back and be entertaining. But to do this well, and what is this, like the fifth game he's called in his career? I mean, CBS has got an absolute home run of a hire here. Can you guys think of anybody else who's been this good?
Yeah, I can mention a couple, although I think Romo's going to be an all-time great. You actually have fun listening to him. You can tell he's having fun doing the job, and he's teaching you stuff. And when he's calling out stuff before the snap and it turns out to be true, that prognostication is very, very rare. But a couple of guys that really impressed me that I've always enjoyed listening to. I know he's polarizing to some, but I'm a big Chris Collinsworth guy. And I think that he has been awfully good even before he was actually doing the stuff on NBC, but I really like him. And look, it might sound a little bit homerish, but two guys we've had on this show quite a bit that I'm a huge fan of, Charles Davis and Joel Klatt. I think Joel has been absolutely fantastic in that team with Gus, and just his voice and the way he's able to speak. You want to watch a college football game and listen to Joel Klatt break it down, and I feel the exact same way about Charles Davis as an analyst as well.
Yeah, both those guys are friends, so it's always tough to kind of judge guys who are your friends. But Joel is a great example of when I met Joel 4 or 5 years ago, we were doing auditions for the new launch of FS1. And I, you know, I'm a big college football fan, but I didn't even put two and two together with the fact that Joel had been a former Colorado quarterback. He was just so good at TV that the ultimate compliment I think you can give a former athlete is lots of people don't even remember that you were an athlete, right? I would put Kirk Herbstreit in that same category. Most people who watch game day aren't aware that Kirk Herbstreit ever played quarterback at Ohio State from having remembered him as an Ohio State quarterback, right? Most people watch game day and think, oh, Kirk Herbstreit is just really good at talking about college football or calling a college football game. Jesse Palmer, I think, is in that same category almost. I mean, people really kind of almost probably remember that he was a Bachelor more than they remember his tenure with the Florida Gators. But Joel is a great example. I think people who are listening to the Fox Game of the Week with him and Gus Johnson calling it, I don't even think they know, like, his background. He's so good at what he does that at a young age, right? I mean, he's still, like, whatever he is, 35 years old, 34 years old. He's going to be able to do this for the next 30 years in theory, and that's pretty exciting and pretty awesome for him. What about you guys out in L.A.?
Well, Clay, first of all, I mean, it was already been mentioned, but I personally love Gus Johnson just because the excitement, it's infectious. It gets me excited.
He was great on the NCAA tournament. It's a shame he doesn't get to call those games anymore.
Right, exactly. But something I wanted to point out, wanted to play some audio for you. And let me preface this by saying that I do think Tony Romo's really, really good, and I think he's going to continue to be really, really good. But Brent Musburger commented.
Yeah, I know he ripped him. I heard about that.
Yeah. Here, listen to this.
Listen to him, okay? Tony, get off it, okay? First of all, you're intruding on your play-by-play man, Jim Nantz, who's just trying to give us a scene. We like to watch the game, okay? And you're not going to be here's a memo to all of you people who, oh, this is great. Uh-uh. It's not going to happen. And the further, the more years you spend away from the league, you're going to know less and less about the personnel that's out on the field. So I'm blowing a stop the hype, okay, right now.
Yeah, I think that's bad of Musburger. Certainly he's going to know less about what's on the field. But I think you have to be true to yourself and do the best possible job that you can, not worrying about what other people think. And to me, that's exactly what Romo's been doing. I love Musburger, too. I think it's a bad look for him to take a shot at Tony Romo 5 games into his career. In general, I would say that obviously I disagree with him. I was kind of surprised that he did that, honestly.
It's not like Tony Romo can't learn the new, you know, personnel packages.
Tony Romo's Tony Romo's not a TV guy, and I think one of the things Brent's doing, and I imagine there's a lot of play-by-play people who notice this, even me doing what little bit of play-by-play that I've done over the last 5 or 6 years, I noticed this from the very beginning with Romo, is that Romo doesn't stop talking when the snap comes. He doesn't stop talking or finishing his point before the extra point of the field goal kick. And sometimes Nantz doesn't have a chance to actually get that call in because Romo's not working on that tic-tac schedule with the staccato where you back off and you let the play-by-play guy take back over. That might be something he learns, or he might just be a little bit different in that way. And honestly, I kind of find it refreshing because it just feels more natural. It feels almost like it's a conversation. I know it's supposed to be a professional call, but it's not like we don't hear 95% of what we need to hear from Jim Nance. I feel like what Tony is doing has a little bit of an imprecision as a broadcast that actually makes it a lot more endearing for just somebody to sit back and enjoy as a viewing experience.
Yeah, you know, that's a good point. I think he feels like he's just having a beer and kind of hanging out. And I think that's what people want in general. I mean, people sometimes will complain, Jason Martin, you've heard this too, like, oh, you don't hit your breaks perfectly, or you don't do your ad reads the exact way they're supposed to be done. Like,
never
people say
heard
that about
that before.
Me. Yeah. People will say that about me, but the reason why I do what I do is I try to talk the exact same way to you guys right now as I would if I were sitting at a bar. And so seems as if we're having a conversation every morning. And I think that works better than me trying to be the traditional broadcasting voice of God, doing perfect teases every time we go to break. Like, oh, you're not going to want to miss this. Like, to me, it sounds so artificial that the way I sound, and ratings reflect it, and certainly downloads reflect it, you'd rather me just be authentic.
Here on Fox Sports Radio.
God, yeah, that's what
radio.
I sound like when
golly
I go to
break.
I like the idea, Clay, and you're one, and I think Romo is one, and I think there are other folks out there in the media that are this way as well. I think there is something to the art of talking to people and not talking at people.
Yeah, that's a good point.
I feel
point.
Like way too many people in broadcasting are talking at you, which sometimes comes across like they're talking down to you, as opposed to actually you feel like when you're listening to a show that's a little bit imperfect in certain respects with the formatics and things like that, that you actually could sit down and have just a beer. Or have a conversation, or maybe you feel like they're on the couch with you watching the game. And I think there's way too much over-professionalism in this industry that does take away the authenticity of what's being presented.
Yeah, and I think a lot of times it's the flaws that makes you like somebody. For instance, I'll give you an example. I love Vern Lundquist, who just left the SEC on CBS, still does the Masters. He gets so much stuff wrong. Even Musburger back in the day would get a decent amount of things a little bit wrong. And to me, a Mike Tirico or a Jim Nance are so great at their craft that they almost never make a mistake. And I almost feel like the imperfection makes it more enjoyable than the perfection. Maybe I'm wrong in that. Maybe some other people feel differently. But when you're so perfect, it sounds like a robot almost at times. And I would rather hear a regular guy talking and occasionally making mistakes. That's what makes them endearing, right? Vern Lundquist would probably get 20 names wrong every game, right? But somehow his voice and the way he called the game was an avuncular Uncle Vern type feeling. Being perfect isn't what makes us like somebody. It's often their imperfections. At least that's my theory. That's how I got my wife anyway.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com and within the iHeartRadio app.
All right, Jason Martin. Have you got a chance to line these up? Do we have people who want to tee off on me?
We got a couple, yeah.
All right, let's go.
One that's an old take. I don't understand. I'm trying to figure out why this is coming back, but I'm fine with this story coming back.
Okay, so who should I go to first?
Let's try Bob in Cleveland first.
Bob in Cleveland. What's up, Bob?
Yeah, I think one of the most cruel and mean-spirited and racist commentaries I ever heard was what you said about the NFL player who was drafted and brought on stage the picture of his dead grandma.
Oh, when I said that he looked like an idiot for bringing his grandma on, you thought that was racist?
I thought that racist and
why was it racist?
Cruel.
Why was it racist?
Because, you know, black.
You think
people
if a white guy
options.
Had carried a huge picture of his grandma on the stage and cursed,
his dead
dropped
grandma.
An F-bomb, you don't think I would have said anything?
Well, I think it's racist.
What about if it
standpoint.
Had been an Asian or a Hispanic guy?
You're
my point here
talk,
is
so
no, because you're not making a very good point. I'm just asking you.
Well,
if a white guy had done
point,
if a white guy had done that,
point.
Would I have done it? You think I would have made fun of a white guy who carried a gigantic picture of his grandma on the stage and then dropped an F-bomb in his interview and said he was going to get to the quarterback while brandishing a huge picture of his grandma? Do you think I would have made fun
of
that?
This goes to white privilege.
Oh, this is you white know, privilege.
Because in our society, you know, blacks have. Black people have obstacles that white people don't.
What obstacle would a white person have had carrying a picture of his grandma onto the stage?
People who are caring look at the, you know, realize these obstacles, and when a black person does something that, you know, maybe it would draw ridicule if a white person had done it, you know, if you have any kind of
so I should treat
you would understand that
if I had any kind of decency, what you want me to do is treat somebody different because of their race. Isn't that being racist?
No.
Okay, so it's
Of white privilege.
Because of my white
privilege.
What's my white privilege worth?
What's your white privilege worth?
Yeah, like how much would, like, you're a white guy in Cleveland. How much would it cost for you to become a black guy? Give up your white privilege. If I gave you $1 million right now, would you become black?
No.
You would not take, that's racist of you. I would become black in a heartbeat for $1 million.
No, I would want $10 million.
You would trade your whiteness for, so your white privilege to you is worth $10 million.
Yes.
What about Asian?
Asians, I would probably say pretty much equal. You know, I would say, well, I'll be an Indian guy, Indian doctor or something. I'd say, oh, yeah, well, you don't have to give me anything.
Oh, okay. So you don't have to get any money at all to be an Indian.
No, because I don't think they face the obstacles that black people do in our society.
What about Hispanic?
Hispanics, I probably want about 2.5 million.
All right, so on your flowchart of white privilege, you'd need $10 million to become a black man, no money at all to become an Indian man who you said would be a doctor, and $2.5 million to become a Hispanic man. Thank you. I was just wondering what your white privilege is worth.
Yeah, and see, this is, you know what, you have a legacy of your Southern heritage where you don't want to admit that you owe black people something.
Yeah.
And that's I think that shows up pretty much in your commentary on the radio.
You know, half my relatives fought for the North and half of them fought for the South.
Well, half of them did fight for the South, though, didn't
they?
So
it's the half of them that fought for the South that I owe black people for?
Yeah.
What do you think I should do? What do you think I should do for black people since I'm Southern? Yeah, so what do you think I should do, Bob, since I'm Southern and obviously racist?
I think you should have a consultant, somebody like me on your show, to warn you, to advise you when you are being inconsiderate of black people.
You think I need a white man to be a white privilege consultant?
Yeah.
Okay. What do you do for
Bob,
a living, Bob?
Bob, he doesn't listen to us, Bob.
Bob, what do you do for a living?
From the South?
No, I got those two guys are in L.A. Jason Martin, he's from Kentucky, but it was a border state.
See, that's how it works. Your Southern heritage is holding back
the country.
To be a fair to black people.
Yeah. So, what do you do for a living, Bob? So, if I decide to hire you to be my fair to black people white guy consultant, I just need to know what other employment you have so that I don't conflict there.
Well, I used to do computer programming, but I retired. But now I have a music business. I sell my songs on the internet.
You sell your soul. Oh, this is
songs on the internet.
Oh, we got to look up this.
What's your most popular song?
Oh, lost him. He better call back. He's got to call back.
Did Bob just hang up without telling us what his most
popular
song was?
Something clipped. I think that may have been a phone issue. I don't think he was going to hang up. Bob, call back, please. We need to look you up.
We got to go to break. But Bob, first of all, we've got to put Bob's songs on. First of all, I am going to hire Bob to be my white privilege consultant from Ohio. I think there's nobody better to tell me what black people think than Bob, a retired computer programmer who's white from Ohio. He knows the black. I mean, like, he knows why the caged bird sings. When I heard Bob call in, I'm like, this dude is basically, he's basically Malcolm X, except white and a computer programmer.
Shouldn't you give all of us raises first before you bring on another mouth to feed?
Yeah, you owe your 40 acres and a mule to Danny G and the crew.
No. You guys are not white privilege consultants. You haven't ever come to me and said, hey, I'll be your white privilege consultant. Bob identified a need on the show. He said, hey, Clay Travis, I can solve that issue for you. And more importantly, there's no better person to speak for the world of black people than Bob. So we need Bob to call back in, 877-996-6369. Also, we're going to touch base with Hannah Yates, who is going to be down in College Station this weekend on the Outkick tailgate tour. We're going to talk to her for a couple of minutes about that. You're not going to want to miss the final segment because hopefully we're going to be able to. Jason Martin, what I need you to do is field this call and then also immediately get Bob's biggest hit so we can play it as we go out to break. All right. This is Outkick the Coverage.
And inside, I feel much more alive. The wind gusts warm. It's little clouds and no like a friend.
This is our white privilege consultant, Bob from Ohio. Let's just let the melodies carry us into Friday. What happened there?
You have to buy the whole album.
Oh, no.
We have to buy the album. We just have samples right now.
Oh, it just cut off so quickly. I was just starting to fill the groove. Just starting to, you know, kind of get the good vibrations going there. What does it mean when Geico says just 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance? It means you probably should have gone to geico.com 15 minutes ago. Is Bob back?
Yeah, he's here.
All right. Hey, Bob, what's up? Bob, here's what I'm going to ask you to do. All right?
Sure.
We are going to have a regular segment with you where you analyze how white privileged I have been on any given week, okay? We're going to pick a day of the week. I want you to listen to all 15 hours of the show. You can download the podcast. I want you to get your notepad. I want you to analyze everything that I argue that involves race at all and try to assess my white privilege. And then we'll have you on and we'll do a white privilege segment with Bob from Ohio, our white privilege consultant. Does that sound like a good idea to you?
Yeah, it sounds like something that would make the country a better place to live.
I agree with you.
No question about that.
So there we go. Bob is going to be, make sure Jason Martin, get his phone number.
I've got it already.
All right. So, Bob, what day should we do it, Bob? What day is good for you?
Any day. I'm retired, so any day is good for me.
I'm thinking maybe like a Thursday, maybe a Wednesday or a Thursday. We have white privilege consultant discussion with Bob to try to make me not as white privileged. This will be like training. Bob, I thank you. We'll also, we need to buy your album. Do we have the right to play your songs on the show?
Oh, sure.
Okay, excellent. All right, we'll be playing Bob from... Thanks for that, Bob.
O'Reilly! Are your wiper blades chattering, skipping, or squeaking? Don't let streaks or smearing on your windshield compromise your visibility. When it's time to replace your wiper blades, stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts and see our selection. Our professional parts people will even install your new wiper blades while you wait. Stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts today.
O'Reilly Auto Parts.
It's Freddie Prinze Jr. and Jeff Dye back in the ring. Wrestling with Freddie makes its triumphant return for an electrifying fourth season. Hey, Jeff, are you ready to rumble our way into an all-new season of Wrestling with Freddie?
You better believe I have. I've been practicing my body slams, and I'm jacked.
All right, don't go injuring yourself now. We'll be highlighting the best stories and matches of the week in wrestling from AEW, WWE, and have one-on-one talks with the best talents in the world of pro wrestling.
Listen to Wrestling with Freddie on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, everybody? This is Stephen A. Smith, host of the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast. Tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at the very least as I bring you all new episodes that feature the biggest headlines in the world of sports, pop culture, business, and I answer your phone calls and respond to your tweets. You'll hear my unfiltered opinions and straight-shooter interviews with top celebrities and game changers, all that and more. So listen to the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Elevation with Stephen Furtick podcast was created with you in mind. This is a podcast for those feeling discouraged or needing guidance from God. Together in this podcast, we'll dive deep into scripture, uncover the powerful truths that will help you rise above your limitations and embrace your full potential. We're here to equip you with the tools you need to conquer life's challenges. Listen to Elevation with Stephen Furtick every Sunday and Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.